Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And this is a podcast that I've actually been looking to do for a little while, and the idea was to talk about the arc of the Warriors and their fan base and everything else like that with somebody who's a fan, a loyalist of another team. And the timing on this was perfect. And so my guest is Ian Carmel. He is a comedian and an Emmy-winning comedy writer, currently writes for The Late Late Show with James Corden, and he is also a diehard Portland Trail Blazers fan. And so he and I had interacted on Twitter and various things over the course of the last few months, and so I approached him about doing a podcast on how the Warriors have changed, how their perception has changed from his perspective, from the Run TMC era to Kevin Durant and everything that's happened since. Really fun conversation, one of my favorites I've done for Locked On Warriors, and definitely something different, but tried to get that kind of perspective, something that is outside of the norm, but that will be hopefully insightful and appreciative, and we go into some interesting directions, and I hope you like it too. So, conversation runs about 25 minutes, hope you like it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, player. Thanks for having me, I'm a fan.
Thanks. I thought it would be fun, especially considering the Warriors play the Blazers tomorrow, to kind of talk about the way that other teams' fan bases think about the Warriors. And I thought you'd be a good person just because you and I have had interactions in the past. And so I think the best place to start is really, as somebody who's followed basketball for a while, what did you think of the Warriors in the time when they were, let's call it, less good than they are now?
I used to love the Warriors, and like their fan base was notorious, isn't the right word, famous for being like an amazing fan base, even when the Warriors weren't that good. Like, and you know, they were kind of like Portland, you know, in the way that they went through, well, no, they kind of weren't like Portland, but they had like fun little eras, like the Run TMC era, you know, was really fun and happened a little bit after the Rip City era. And they, you know, it seems like the fans were always maybe given just enough to keep on hoping. And I always loved that. I loved when people compared, you know, Blazers fans to Warriors fans favorably. So I always used to root for them. I love the Baron Davis team. I love that. What do they call them? The We Believe Warriors? Was that it? Or am I?
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, I actually lived in L.A. when the We Believe team happened. It was my last year of college, and Lakers fans absorbed the We Believe team, too, because if memory serves, the Lakers weren't that good that year, and they just thought it was really fun, and the Warriors had been suffering for so long, Lakers fans were on board.
Right, exactly. They were the little brother team, I think, at least to everyone in the Western Conference. And the Warriors, you know, like people at my age, and I think even a little older, and definitely people younger, at that point, none of us had ever had our hearts broken by the Warriors, really. So there weren't any vendettas, you know, the way I would never root for, like, the Jazz or the Bulls, even if they were plucky, as a Blazers fan. I could root for the Warriors.
Well, yeah, and that makes sense in a lot of different ways, because, you know, a lot of, like, just rooting and everything like that is kind of about animosity and history. And the Warriors, like, you talked about this a little bit, what stands out for them, and this is true with the Blazers as well, is that their bursts of quality were really short. And when your bursts of quality are really short, then that means that, you know, people like Run TMC, I think, was a year and a half. So, like, people could fall in love with it, and then it was gone. And so I think that in some ways made them even more sympathetic, because it was, even when something was good, it got taken away, and it certainly wasn't the fans' fault.
It makes them culty in a way, the way that people still romanticize, like, Sid Vicious, you know what I mean, or Kurt Cobain or Tupac, is that they were these, like, very brief, very beautiful flashes in the pan, and you never got to see them destroyed by anything but their own inability to sustain, you know?
Well, yeah, and like, it fits that whole idea of, you know, living long enough to see yourself as the villain, you know, like, the idea that eventually, you know, most teams get good enough that people will eventually hate them.
Yes, and they even the Blazers team, the LaMarcus Aldridge-era Blazers teams, people started to sour on, I felt like, just because they'd even been around, like, a little too long.
Yeah, and also one of the things, and we'll get into more kind of more specifics with the timeline, but one of the other big changes that happened was I think there was a perception around when the Warriors won their first title that they kind of changed from being a plucky smaller market team to being a big market team, or at least partially, maybe not like a huge one like New York or LA, but kind of in that next tier. And that shift in perception was partially fueled by the reports of a new arena and just the way that they started actually getting free agents. And nobody ever, unless you're from that place, nobody ever really likes the big market teams unless it's as a fascination like the Knicks have been the last 20 years.
Right. Well, the Knicks, yeah, because they're just, it's been like so consistently lousy. But there's also something like kind of poetic and beautiful about just the whole idea of the New York Knicks. At least to me, Madison Square Garden being in the heart of the city and how everybody talks about New York like it's the birthplace of basketball, even if that's not true in most ways. But you're right. I think a little bit of the perception of the small market, big market team thing with the Warriors has also been San Francisco's changing identity.
Yeah, that's
true. You know,
true.
Like, it used to be a very, like, romanticized place, you know, the home of, like, interesting writers and, you know, people would hang out there and creatives and, you know, the counterculture. That used to be San Francisco's identity. And in the last, you know, 15, but really more like 10 and even 5 years, it's become sort of like a playground for you know, the tech elite. Even as a stand-up comedian, doing stand-up in San Francisco was way more fun 5 years ago when I was a way worse comedian than it is now. Because now when you go, you know, you're performing for like a bunch of rich people who spend, you know, 20 hours a day working, you know, working at their job, working for their company. And back in the day, it used to be a way more fun place to perform because you'd be getting like, there was still like a lot of rich people. It's never been a cheap city, but you would get more creatives. You get more people who weren't like fully entrenched in the tech world. So now it's like kind of not, Oakland's way more fun to perform in now than San Francisco.
Well, and there's also a parallel to that, while it's not to the same degree as somebody who was born and raised in the Bay Area and has lived here almost my whole life, between, like, with the way the Warriors are. You know, like, that the Warriors, let's say, going to Oracle, I started covering them in 09, when if you wanted to go, you could go. It wasn't really a problem. So the people who were there really wanted to be there, and now it's a thing. And so it being a thing, while the fans, it's kind of this mass, wonderful mass delusion that the fans think they have to be energetic. So it's, you know, maybe it's like 80 to 90% of what it used to be, but which it shouldn't, it should be worse than that. You know, it should be like those kind of years where it'd be a little bit flat. But there is a fundamental difference when it's the people in the arena are living and dying with the team versus the people who are there because it's entertaining. Like I grew up with the Warriors being entertaining for only a few years, you know, like a few seconds.
Very brief. Yeah, I mean, it was very brief. And entertaining in ways where I don't think, I mean, I can't speak for you, but were you ever sitting at home like the championship this year? It's happening.
No, never. I didn't even grow up a Warriors fan because the Warriors were just so bad for the most part that I couldn't get myself invested in it. I watched it from time to time, but I found myself more interested in basketball broadly than the Warriors specifically.
Yeah, I can kind of share that sentiment, you know, because during the Rip City teams, you know, those Drexler, Kersey, you know, Terry Porter, Duckworth, Buck Williams teams, I was kind of too young to really, really be a diehard Blazer fan. And I was more generally interested in basketball. But the thing when I was younger was how much kids liked Michael Jordan and how much I didn't like that they liked Michael Jordan. And that kind of like drove me back towards the Blazers, you know, and further away from just general NBA fandom. It was not liking people liking the popular thing. Which is a very Portland thing to do.
That makes sense. Yeah, it is a Portland thing to do. That also makes sense. And, you know, just in terms of everything, and then that probably culminated in that Blazers team that was a heartbeat away from making the conference, from making the NBA Finals.
The 2001. I just worked with Shaq the other day. I wrote a sketch for Shaq, and he came and did it. And he couldn't have been a nicer guy, but there was part of me the whole time that under my breath was just like, I hate you. You ruined my childhood. I hate you so much. Just from that Game 7, that fourth quarter of that Game 7. Still haunts me. We even talked about it a little bit. He cracked some jokes about it.
Well, I've had the same thing covering the NBA. I've never really talked about this openly, but you know, I was at UCLA when for two of the three Final Fours, and we got victimized by Florida, and it was awkward for me covering Joakim Noah, covering Corey Brewer, you know, all those guys, because it's like you ruined days of my life. Like it's very rare to have that sort of interaction, and my experiences with them have all been positive, but it is this very weird visceral cultural thing that you also get when you actually really care about something that you don't get any other way.
You can't take it away. It's like a very scaled down version of seeing of like being Inigo Montoya. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Constantly searching for the man who killed your father, and then you finally meet him, and you don't really know what to do with the opportunity.
So I think that's as good a transition as any in terms of talking about when the perception of the Warriors changed. And like for me, so I mean they had the best record, and then they won the title that year. But for me, it didn't really start to swing until the run at the beginning of last season. You know, more so because there was all that little kind of like fluky buzz, and they were still a good story. But then when it looked like they were starting to become a powerhouse.
Yeah, I was excited by it last year, even because I mean, I think part of how I perceived the Warriors was tied to how I perceived the Blazers going into last season. You know, as a Blazer fan, you're just kind of like, probably not going to be anything big happening for us this year. So I did, like you said earlier, I shifted a little bit more to being just like a general NBA fan, and so I liked the Warriors at the beginning of the last season, and I was fascinated by their domination. And I really like their individual players. Like, a lot of them, like, I know people hate Draymond Green, but I love Draymond Green. Like, I still love him. I think he's my favorite Warrior. He's one of my 10 favorite players in the NBA. I just love, I mean, the nut shots. Can I say nut on here, or are you going to have to bleep that out?
I'm okay with that.
Okay. The groin shots are something I don't love about him, but I just love his attitude. I love the way he talks, you know, smack to other players. I love how he makes fun of JaVale McGee on Snapchat. I'm just like, I think he's a super funny dude. I really enjoy his presence. To me, it's about entertainment, and he is one of the most entertaining people I've ever followed in the NBA.
That's a good way to think about it. And also for me, you know, as somebody who's covered this team, he's improved so much over the course of his career, and that's not something you ever see without a guy working hard. I mean, you're a fan of the team that has Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. It's really the same thing with those guys. And, you know, that when you're invested in it in a way, whether that be, you know, as a fan, as a writer, as somebody who covers the team, you know, like, that's something that we can all relate to because you did that. But so then I think I agree with you that in that time didn't. So then did the turn come when they won 73, or was it even was it only when they got Durant?
I will admit I was rooting for the Cavaliers in the finals because I wanted to see Cleveland win a ring, and I thought it would make a more interesting storyline if they, you know, went 1-1 and then had the rubber match the next year. But I wasn't rooting against the Golden State Warriors. I rooted against them in that Golden State series against Portland in the play because as stupid as it seems right now, and it seems so stupid, and it even seemed stupid at the time, I bought in a little bit. You know, you start doing that fan math in your head.
It happens, like, especially when you only need to win a series or two, and you're like, all we need is like one or two small things, and we can get all the way there. And once you're in the finals, you never know.
Completely, right? Exactly. Okay, it could go seven, you never know. So you're doing all those dumb equations in your head, like if the Blazers take this one, and Steph Curry's not quite 100%, but I was never, like, disgusted by the idea of them. And they were all, the other thing about it is they were all so complimentary of the Blazers, like, after the series was over, that it was really hard to be mad at them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of mutual respect between those two teams. And, I mean, it's not only because Lillard grew up in Oakland, but just the Blazers play hard. The Blazers, in a lot of ways, represent what this Warriors team respects, which is, you know, guys that got better, guys that improved, that stayed together, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it aligns. And it's part of what makes LeBron's apparent hatred of the Warriors so entertaining to me is that there is this real difference in kind of a lot of philosophy stuff between those two teams. And while I wouldn't say it culminated in 3-1, that did play a part in the whole thing, and it's, you know, a part of the storyline for this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the disrespect between those two groups now. Whether you see the LeBron Halloween pictures, of course.
Oh, absolutely. And it's really interesting. Like, LeBron as a figure, you know, it's also weird because we're almost exactly the same age, and just kind of as he's grown up and in the public light, I think about it in terms of my own life. And it's so fun to see him interacting with a team that it seems like he genuinely dislikes, because he does a lot from kind of that PR savvy perspective. And I don't really mean that as a criticism. I mean, that's just the way that athletes do it. And to see him just like, okay, I'm embracing this as being like one of my things has been both surprising and honestly amusing.
And I agree with you 100%. It's been It's been great. You know, I don't think I don't think most NBA players think in the, like, as long as we all get money, I don't care. Like, I don't think most of them think like that. But a lot of the time it seems like that because they make such safe maneuvers. You know, LeBron wants people who live in Oakland to buy LeBron still, so he doesn't want to be too mean. So it's really nice when there's like the cracks in the armor that you can see through, where you're like, oh, these people really don't like each other. And basketball and winning is more important than, you know, what the optics are on a situation in certain large markets. You know, that's really refreshing and cool. But to go back and answer your question, it was the Durant signing that really soured me on the whole thing. And I want to qualify that with a statement, which is, like, I hate seeing people rag on the Golden State Warriors fan base because they did go through so much. I see people, like, you know, saying, like, Warriors fans, you know, they've got Kobe jerseys hanging in their closet, implying that, you know, they're, like these front-running fans. And that just does not ring true to me at all. And I'm not just saying this because this is a Warriors podcast. Like, the Warriors fans have been through a lot. It's like if the Blazers all of a sudden, you know, landed the next two number one picks somehow and became, like, a really amazing team. I would be furious if people said Portland fans were, like, bandwagon fans. It's like, no, we've been through hell. And it's nice that somebody who's been through hell actually gets to, you know, spend a couple seasons in heaven. So I'm happy with the Golden State Warriors fans. But the Durant thing did bug me.
Yeah, and I understand why it did. I mean, yeah. you have a big thing that's also the idea of a team building up in the quote-unquote right way. And, you know, the Warriors did it through drafting their own guys and developing them. And then they got Iguodala. But at that point, you know, I don't think anybody thought, oh, he's going to be the best player on a title team or anything like that. Which, you know, he won the finals MVP, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so you had all that. And then what Durant did is he fundamentally changed that identity, because then it became like, even though it's only one guy, well, and then Zaza and West eventually, they're the mercenaries. Like, that's a fundamental change that happened. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that there's the fundamental difference that people lose sight of, but it makes sense why they do, between the diehard fans who were always there and then the people who jump on. And so, like, everybody hates the people who jump on, because that's just the nature of everything. You know, it's like, it's a selection bias.
Even a lot of the old Warriors fans probably hate the people who jumped on.
I'm sure they do, especially considering how much they raise ticket prices. And so, like, so you have all that. And those people oftentimes are sometimes the most boisterous. Like, because, you know, the fans that have been there a long time, they know not to puff their chests, because not everything lasts forever. And so it's ones that are like, oh, man, you know, I was, you know, like, it was so sad when the Warriors lost to the Spurs in 2013 and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's like, and like, that's the worst thing that's happened to them as a Warriors fan. It's like that group of people. I'm open. Like, it's wonderful if they're listening to the podcast, but that's different to deal with, not only for Warriors fans, but for fans of other teams. And, like, you know, it's that way with anybody. Like, the people who are fans of, you know, a specific player and wherever he goes, and you can handle that with grace and you can handle that with dignity, but generally it's tough.
It can definitely be tough. And here's the thing that the Durant Warriors move boils down to for me. It's the thing I don't like that I can't be angry at anyone about, if that makes sense. Because I can't blame Kevin Durant for wanting to pick where he gets to play. And if that makes him happier, who am I to you know, be mad at him about it? I'm not. And how could you be mad at the Warriors, who played their situation perfectly, you know, and lucked into a couple? Well, not even luck. They signed some really smart contracts, and Steph Curry's, you know, bulky ankles definitely helped at first. But, like, how can you be mad at the Warriors for doing that? Any team would do that. So, like, it's this thing that it makes me upset, because to me it made two teams less fun to root for. Like, it made the Thunder less of a contender, you know, and watching Russell Westbrook go crazy is amazing, and it's like pure black tar basketball heroin. It's amazing. And then the Warriors, there's no part of them that seems underdoggy anymore. And now they feel, and I'm sure they will grow out of this, but they feel now like one of those bulky, clumsy super teams like we've seen fail before, and not fail before, like the Heat. But just, like, it made them just feel, like, less fun to root for. And those were two of my favorite non-Blazer teams, like, to watch and sort of have a stake in before that.
It also deprived the entire NBA of a real resolution. Like, we only got Warriors Thunder once, and it was a weird series. I mean, it was fun. It was an incredibly fun series. But, you know, it was kind of, I think everybody was ready for more of it. And the idea that it fundamentally changed all of that. And, you know, I don't care as much about the idea of, you know, oh, the regular season doesn't matter as much because there are two really good teams. But it fundamentally changed the playoffs, too. I mean, not only do you have that, but you have the Spurs losing Tim Duncan. You know, like, we'll see what happens with some of the other teams around the top. But it's like, it made a lot of that stuff less interesting, even if it created a team that I personally find interesting and get to cover, but I understand why that makes people mad.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, people should be like a little bit frustrated. Like it gutted the traditional storylines that we get with every generation of basketball players, you know, and it completely changed that narrative, which, and maybe it'll still be fun. And I think it will still be fun. There's so many really fun subplots, but I feel like, you know, the two currencies that the NBA traffics in as far as appealing to their fans are excellence and hope, you know? And mm-hmm. It definitely made one team more excellent. It made one team that wasn't excellent or that was excellent not as excellent anymore. But it also then, like, killed hope for all of those mid-level teams, like the Blazers, you know, for the most part. Like, I don't hold any... And I can be a very irrational fan sometimes, but I hold no hope of them winning the championship this year. Now I'm going to get lumped in with Faye, and Dame's going to block me on Twitter. But, like, and even before that, it would have been ridiculous to think they could have. But it wasn't as ridiculous as it is now, you know?
Well, and I hadn't thought of this until now, but I think there's a direct parallel to why I was super mad when they traded Harden, which was the idea that we never really got to see that at its peak. And,
I know,
you know,
yeah.
So I think it's kind of the parallel to that. But not only did they trade Harden to another team in the conference and it made the Thunder worse, but Durant went to another team that, you know, that didn't need him in that way. Like, sure, it helps, you know, Kevin Durant's an amazing player and it helps, but it was a very different thing. And I mean, while I think it probably eventually makes the Warriors more entertaining than they were, it probably makes them less entertaining, albeit maybe more interesting for basketball fans for the next, let's say, 4 months, because they're going to be working all this out. It's going to be awkward. You know, the parallels to Miami are absolutely there, especially through three games. And so you have all this weird stuff, and the deprivation of Oklahoma City might be the bigger frustration point, but at the same point, it all gloms together, and you can't throw that at OKC, Sam Presti, whoever. You throw it all at Durant and the Warriors.
Yes. Yeah, because you can't be mad at the Thunder, even if they made moves that made it harder for them to keep Durant at certain points. It's going to be interesting to see. And it's kind of weird now, like the Warriors with their clumsy start, and it's three games, and it seems so ridiculous to you know, judge things off of three games. But now we haven't even been getting like the Hoga Bonito, like Warriors basketball, like that beautiful game that we got from last season. We haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah, it's probably going to take time.
Durant's been amazing, but we haven't even gotten that for three games.
Yeah, it'll be different. And, I mean, you also have the idea of just a massively different kind of compilation of supporting players, like Patchouli and West look a little bit off and everything like that, and it'll take a while to sort it out. However, all of that can be redeemed if JaVale McGee just starts getting extended minutes.
Yes, that would completely redeem it. I would love to see JaVale get up to just like 30, 35 by the playoffs, you know? It turns out he's a crucial member of the death lineup.
If the Warriors cared about popular perception, that is the only thing they need to do to change it. Like, they become heroes if they play JaVale McGee. Like, if they start him, let's say, against the Cavs or something, and he has, like, five blocks, all of a sudden they're the favorites and the Cavs are the villains.
People are rooting for him. They should do that. It's like a fun, gimmicky thing.
Yeah.
You just give him one total underdog story. And JaVale McGee is a big enough underdog to completely blot out the Kevin Durant effect.
Well, on that note, is there anything, before we leave, is there anything, you have this platform to talk to Warriors fans, is there anything else you want to share?
To speak directly to Warriors fans, I guess, congratulations. Good for you. I hope I one day get to experience both the joys of having a championship won in my life, and then... And then the pits of having every other NBA fan in the country sort of hate me.
They go together.
I would love to experience both of those things, and I'm very jealous of you. And that's kind of it, man. I don't know. There's no part of me that can be mad at Warriors fans for what happened in the NBA. It was just a weird stars aligning situation, you know? And I would be a hypocrite if it happened to the Blazers. And any fan, by the way, any fan who's going in on like Warriors fans or anything like that, shut up. Because if it happened to your team, I guarantee you, you'd be as stoked or even more stoked, you know, than they are. And usually, I mean, it happened to the Heat, and the Heat had already won a championship. You know, the Lakers tried it, and the Lakers have, you know, so many championships. It's nice that it happened to the Warriors, who don't really have a rich history of winning, you know?
Well,
it happened to one of the have-nots.
Well, I thank you for your time, and also wish you that in your future.
Thank you very much. I don't really see a scenario where the biggest free agent, you know, in 5 years ends up coming. Well, maybe that's not true, because LeBron was like a year before. I don't see a scenario where a Kevin Durant makes the conscious choice to move to Portland, but maybe if at some point there's an NBA player who's like really into the Smith and enjoys a cappuccino and wants to eat chicken wings and Pock Pocks, I invite them to come to the Rose City. I will move back and be your personal. I will be your Riley Curry if you move to Portland and play there. This is to any big free agent coming up. Boogie Cousins, come to Portland. I'll sit in your lap at press conferences. It'll be real cute.
That's an absolutely great sales pitch. Thanks again for the time.
Thanks, Dan. I'm a big fan, man. Again, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Ian Carmel for taking the time to come on. You can watch his handiwork on The Late Late Show with James Corden, and you can see him. He's a traveling stand-up comic, as you mentioned, and you can also follow him on Twitter, at Ian Carmel. That's IanKarmel. As you would expect, I will do a podcast most of you listen to this on Tuesday, so on, let's call it today's Warriors-Blazers game. It looks like it's going to be with Eric Gunderson and Dane Carbaugh of Locked On Blazers, which is fun. I've followed both of them for a long time. Eric and I talked about that dominating Warriors win in the preseason, and we'll see if it's different or similar to that. And for those of you who kind of wanted my perspective outside of the podcast I did with Andy Liu from Warriors World on the game, my game analysis and player analysis are both at The Athletic. And I believe at least one of them is free, but of course I encourage you to subscribe considering it is my livelihood, but whatever you want to do in that sense. So it was a lot of fun to do that, as though I am admittedly battling sickness, it should be okay. And apologies for a little bit of wonkiness with the mic, I'm still trying to get the levels right, but I think it was better today than it was yesterday. So that is in the process of everything else. And yeah, it's going to be a fun week of Warriors basketball. Blazers on Tuesday, Thunder on Thursday, and those will, of course, both be given the game treatment, and it's going to be a fun time, and still probably going to do something with my friend Fred Katz on Thursday before that game as kind of a preview of sorts. So nothing's locked in yet, but that seems to be kind of the general plan that we're using. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, I really do appreciate it. You can reach out to me at Daniel LaRue on Twitter, DanNyLeroux. Also a great way of keeping up with my content because I update it more frequently and more accurately than Facebook and other forms of social media. And also you can email me if it's a longer form thing, DanielLaRueMBA@gmail.com. If you want to keep track with the podcast, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com is the show email. You can use whichever one you want, whatever makes you happy. Really do appreciate it. And so thankful to everybody for the run. We're already over 160,000 total downloads, and while downloads are not the end-all, be-all of anything, it is a wonderful measure of the kind of progress, and I really do appreciate that. And so if you want to spread the word, one of the best ways is actually through word of mouth, because if you endorse something personally, whether that be on Twitter, Reddit, in person, for those of you who kind of have those conversations, it's a great way to do it. And also you can subscribe, download, leave a rating, leave a review. Those are much appreciated as well. So it's been a blast to do this. And of course, I will keep on going for the entirety of this season and hopefully long, long past that. And I hope you've been enjoying it. And, you know, I'm going to do podcasts that kind of bend the medium and stretch the medium in this format, partially because you have to produce enough material and also partially because I think it's fun. And so hopefully you like this as well. They won't all necessarily fit the mold of, you know, an opposing fan's perspective and things like that. But, you know, I always want to do different things. And part of the idea for me is that, you know, you want to make sure that you're creating content that is worth people's time and that is different. And so, you know, things like talking to Ian, which I really did enjoy quite a bit, are definitely going to be part of that. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.